Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Healthcare costs are often cited as a major source of anxiety for Americans. Quite simply, we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world, bar none. Costs seem to inexorably rise. We've all read or heard stories about exorbitant emergency room bills, prices for life-saving medications, and each year we seem to pay more out of our own pockets for less. Well, a new podcast by the name of An Arm and a Leg has just come out in time for open enrollment season. Inspired by brilliant podcasts like Planet Money, 99% Invisible, and Death, Sex, and Money, An Arm and a Leg aims to take the complex world of healthcare costs and break them down so that any of us can understand. And it's done through the wise and sensitive eyes of the show's host and number one patient, Dan Weissman. Weissman is open about having a congenital heart condition, not life-threatening, that requires ongoing monitoring and is an archetypal pre-existing condition. He takes us through his own family's calculus in terms of how to buy health insurance, but goes well beyond to other listeners' stories, and maybe even yours. His belief is that healthcare costs are one of those arcane subjects we don't like to talk about or share with each other, and that keeps us lonely. His show has warmth, humor, and excellent reporting. The whole thing is a driveway moment, such that when I listened to the first three episodes, I just had to keep on walking so I could hear them all. A new episode comes out each Tuesday, and the first season will wrap just before Christmas. You can listen to An Arm and a Leg on any computer or smartphone using podcast apps, or just on the web. It's downloadable if you prefer from iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. Dan Weissman, host and executive producer of the new podcast, An Arm and a Leg, is our guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dan Weissman, welcome to Medical Monday. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for the podcast.
Sure. Well, An Arm and a Leg is about the cost of healthcare, and it is in everybody's life, including mine. In my case, you know, I was thinking, wow, I wonder what my next job will be. And in some ways, the most logical thing was to go out on my own as a reporter, having left a job on staff. But that didn't seem really thinkable because where would my family's health care come from? Health insurance come from? My wife has a business of her own. But this seemed, so the kind of reason to do it and the reason not to do it were exactly the same.
Right. So one of the things I found interesting in that, I guess, first the introductory episode, there was, of course, the teaser, but that was where you sort of expected people to talk you out of this crazy idea of starting your own podcast. And I guess much to your surprise, and the pleasant surprise, I would say, of your listeners, people sort of rather talked you into it. Go ahead and do this podcast. And everybody has a story about crazy costs of healthcare, just from mundane, you know, very often mundane things like just buying insurance to much less mundane things like having rare diseases and having to pay for exorbitantly expensive drugs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the folks who end up being quoted in that first episode were folks that I was just talking about this crazy idea and not like, hey, you have some crazy story. But everybody that I talked with was like, oh, yeah, well, sure, when I had cancer this last year, you wouldn't believe all the things that happened. I was like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was the big surprise. This was not calling my friends, you know, whose GoFundMe campaigns I had contributed to. This was just, you know, people in my life, some of whom I was asking for professional advice, some of whom I was saying, like, isn't there something else I should be doing?
One of the few episodes here that have dropped so far, there was one with an Oklahoma connection. I want to alert our listeners, which is, you know, we have the Woody Guthrie Archive here in Tulsa. And he's a famous Oklahoman, although he, of course, achieved his fame on the coasts, not really much in Oklahoma. But the story is about Marjorie Guthrie, his second wife. And as many of us know, Woody Guthrie died of Huntington's disease. But I certainly didn't know about Marjorie's quest to try to find a way for pharmaceutical firms to actually be motivated to produce drugs for these very rare diseases. And you came upon, I guess, the story of Abby Myers. It was such a fascinating story. Do you mind just sharing a broad sketch of that?
Sure, sure. I mean, just to start with Marjorie, who's a remarkable person. I've been fascinated with Woody Guthrie's story for a long time. Just such an amazing person, and his story had such a tragic aspect to it. That after he died, Marjorie, his second wife, who took care of him even after they were no longer married, made it her project because she and Woody had kids together, and there was no way of knowing, you know, whether they would develop Huntington's, because so little was known about it and doesn't show until later in life. She made it her mission not just to get pharmaceutical companies to research treatments for it, but just to get medical research for it off the ground at all. And she was made an enormous crusade of it. I ended up talking to her daughter, Nora, who recollected her mom's story for me. And she said she still meets people today who have been leading Huntington's researchers for decades, who say, oh, yeah, well, it was because your mom visited my med school and got a lot of us interested in this kind of research. So, yeah, Marjorie's story was super interesting. Abby Myers was a woman who described herself as a housewife from Connecticut. And, you know, she was. She had a son, David, born in the late 60s, whose behavior was surprising. And he made kind of unexpected vocalizations. He had movements he couldn't control. He twitched. And in the 70s, this was completely unfamiliar. And, you know, doctors were puzzled. And then one day, she is looking at the Sunday paper, and there's an article in, like, the magazine section about this exotic ailment called Tourette syndrome. And she's like, oh my gosh, this is what my son has. And she, that led her to find doctors, but there were very few treatments. And one that did appear to be effective was discontinued after it was being tried out because it was thought that Tourette's wasn't common enough for there to be a market for it. So she learned that that was what's called an orphan drug. And she made it her crusade for the next bunch of years to develop treatments for rare illnesses. And just to tease, I mean, you know, the magic that allowed her to succeed involved both the mentorship of Marjorie Guthrie, who had been plowing the fields of rare diseases for a long time, and the intervention of 1970s TV star Jack Klugman.
That was great. And without spoiling anything, I just think it is worth mentioning Jack Klugman, who you remind us, of course, I had sort of forgotten about The Odd Couple. How could I forget about that? It's probably his most famous thing with Tony Randall, where he plays Oscar, the slob roommate. But really, it's much more about Quincy MD, which, you know, still is cited in med schools today, of course, as you point out, is sort of a precursor to things like CSI or House MD, those kinds of things. But Quincy in its time was such an amazing thing. I had no idea. I used to love Quincy. I was a kid, but I religiously watched it, and it probably had no impact on me going to med school, maybe a little bit. But Quincy was such a righteous hero, but I had no idea about this advocacy built into network television primetime show. That was just so interesting.
It was. Apparently there were other episodes, too, that were all about advocacy, including one that I remember coming across later. And I also loved Quincy growing up and you know, thought it was and was really into it. We're probably about the same age. And yeah, did not think of it as this kind of crusading thing. But there was that they weren't all one of them is remembered kind of derisively. It was a crusading episode about the dangers of punk rock to our youth. That is a fun one to look up on YouTube. Yeah.
You take the good with the bad. Well, I guess I would just conclude that without giving away too many spoilers, or hopefully no spoilers, but just to say that, you know, Abby Myers had the great caveat as a fantastic advocate who wound up, you know, really devoting a lot of her adult life to this cause of getting pharmaceutical firms to actually be motivated to manufacture drugs for orphan conditions, or orphan drugs as they're called, for these rarer conditions. You know, she said, just be careful what you wish for. And I guess, you know, it's no surprise to anybody that I think one of the outcomes of this is that we do have now incentives for these firms to make these orphan drugs for rare conditions, but the prices on them are just, you know, they seem outrageously high. And I guess if third-party insurance is paying, you know, I guess, and we're covered, we feel blessed that we're covered, but it just doesn't make any rational sense in the marketplace.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you ask the folks who are involved in making the drugs, they'll say, well, the marketplace is of course the logic for it. But yeah, no, the prices seem crazy to most of us, and tragically crazy to folks who are shut out.
You're listening to Medical Monday. This is Studio Tulsa. I'm John Chu, and my guest today is Dan Weissman, who's host and executive producer of a new podcast called An Arm and a Leg, which is all about the costs of healthcare. And he's releasing weekly episodes through the end of December, and it's available on any streaming app that you have. It's on your iTunes or Stitcher or any of the podcast apps. And each episode's roughly 20 minutes or so, and they're chock full of great collaborations, fantastic interviews, and you learn a ton about healthcare from the perspective of someone who is in it himself. As you point out, Dan, you yourself have a congenital heart condition. And so this quest for healthcare that you don't have frequently, because as you luckily tell us, you're doing pretty well, but you do need some monitoring a couple of times a year, which tends to be kind of dramatically expensive.
It's amazing, yeah. And, you know, it feels like a lot when I pay it with insurance. I'm like, really? You want $600 for this? Okay, you know, I don't have insurance for that. But then, you know, when we're looking around for what's our coverage going to be next year and will this be covered, and gosh, what would it be if we had to do it on our own because it's only available in certain places, you know, I looked it up and I was like, oh, that test was $6,000. And then the visit to the doc to talk about the test was another $6,000. I mean, that's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, and as you point out, I think these are the sort of more prosaic horror stories, if you will, of individuals dealing with health conditions. These are not the ones that, for example, hit the NPR story of the bill of the month, where there was the guy in Texas who had the $100,000 plus bill for, unfortunately, in an emergency situation, being taken to an out-of-network hospital where he was slapped with this huge bill. And that exposure, the happy ending to that story was the hospital wound up waiving whatever was left of the bill he had to pay. But of course, that spotlight can't shine on everybody. And I think your podcast really is about, and I guess you're getting a ton of stories of people who, you know, whose stories perhaps aren't as outrageous as a monthly, you know, bill of the month kind of story, but are just there in the everyday. And of course, one of your areas of focus is on, and the timing of the release of the show is really on the marketplace, the exchanges where people who are either self-employed or uninsured will be buying health insurance through the exchange. And that's going on. Open enrollment is with us now this time of year, late in the year. And without a lot of promotion from the federal government, people only have about 6 weeks in order to pony up. But one of the things you taught me is that, I guess it's probably not that surprising, but I would guess after several years of this that people are better at picking health plans, but research is showing that, in fact, we're terrible at it.
Yeah. And it's a very surprising thing. And it's, of course, it's not just folks who are buying through the Obamacare marketplace. I mean, anybody whose job offers you a choice of health plans also has a choice to make. Well, which one of these is a better deal for me? And, you know, it feels like it's hard to do. And, you know, these economists did a study that came out last year that shows, yeah, we're completely horrible at it. And for kind of two reasons. And one of them is that many of us don't completely understand all the terms. Like, okay, deductible, I think most of us get that. Or what's a premium? Well, that's how much you pay each month. And what's the difference between a copay and coinsurance? Help me out with that. And then you have to kind of be able to kind of construct the proper spreadsheet and do all the formulas to figure out, like, well, what, like, for my deal, like, well, I have this test, like, what's that I have to do and that has to be covered? Like, what's going to be the best deal for me? Like, what's going to be, you know, what's going to prevent me from having kind of potentially catastrophic costs? But also, like, what's going to be the thing that's like, this could save me, like, one of these things could save me a couple $1,000s even without a catastrophe, and which one is it? So we don't understand the terms all the time, and we don't know how to do the math. And as I found out from someone who, Lynn Quincy from a group called the Healthcare Value Hub, you know, I said to her, like, well, I'm pretty good with this spreadsheet. She was like, oh, yeah? Well, how about the pharmaceutical deductible? How about the out-of-network deductible? How about this? And I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I do know how to do all this stuff. So we really don't, you know, most of us don't have tools. There are some people get tools through their employers, and a few state Obamacare exchanges have tools that basically do all the math for you and tell you, like, in a kind of a regular vanilla year for you, this is about how much this plan would cost you. And in a year where you get hit by a bus, God forbid, this is about how much you'd end up paying. And those are kind of the numbers that you need. You need the kind of vanilla year and the hit by a bus year to make the judgment. And, and that vanilla year depends on who you are. So I have this, you know, congenital heart condition that doesn't bother me but needs monitoring. So a vanilla year for me includes that. And for somebody else, it doesn't necessarily.
And the qualitative research showed that when it comes to choosing health plans or going through this exercise kind of every year, that people would in fact prefer to pay their taxes, or I don't know if they want to pay them, but to calculate or fill out their forms, their tax forms, or go to the gym for a hard workout. And of course, my only feeling on that was it just almost sounded more pleasant to go to the dentist and have your teeth scraped or pulled than doing that. But you're right. And I have a job. I work at a university. So one of the great benefits is health insurance. But even that has become exceedingly complex. And as you point out, there is a spreadsheet, a grid that we're given every year, a matrix that requires us to not only understand our, you know, network in, network out of network, what's covered benefit, what's the pharmacy copay versus the office visit or the ER copay. I mean, and then on top of it, if you cover your dependents or your family, I mean, it really becomes an extraordinarily complex decision. And I mean, I guess if you're the employer, it makes sense from the viewpoint of you're spending more and more on insuring your employees and their families. So you've got to do something to try to control the cost. So if that means breaking it down into little pieces that might make it more affordable, I mean, you can see where they're coming from, but it certainly doesn't feel kind of like being warm and nestled in the blanket benefits of yesteryear.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the economist I talked to, he was doing some consulting for a big corporation. And they were like, we would share this information with you, like what choices we gave our employees and what they actually did. And he was like, great. And he thought they were trying to do the right thing. They gave their employees a lot of choices. They had like 48 different configurations they could choose. And his impression was they wanted people to have choices. You know, but they didn't, what they weren't thinking through is kind of a design problem. They weren't thinking through, like, how do we give people choices in a way that they can really understand the choices that they're making? And that, I think, is, I think that's the big stumbling block for a lot of us. It's like our, because it is true that employers are kind of playing the numbers and being like, oh, well, you know, the costs are going up. We could raise the premium. We could raise the deductible. But then if they're offering you a choice, the real question is like, well, of the choices I'm getting, like, how do I evaluate them?
Well, and that's, yeah, and we get decision fatigue, essentially. One of the things that I, you know, I hadn't had the burden, really. I've played around a little bit with some of the healthinsurance.gov website, but I had forgotten, I guess, or hadn't really experienced it enough to know just that if you want to change parameters, like you want to have a higher copay because you want to pay less of a premium every month or a higher deductible, you know, you want to change the parameters, there's not a convenient way. You had to start the whole thing over every time you wanted to change the parameters. So that was really vexing to someone who's trying to do a price comparison. But then in the podcast episode I heard, there is this hacker, not a hacker, but a website that lets you essentially get to that bottom line of what's it going to really cost you in a good year versus a year where you might use a lot of healthcare. But unfortunately, it sounds like it's not really updated. It's only updated in certain states. And I guess one of those that it had not continued to be updated in was Illinois, where you live.
Where I live, that's true. Yeah, so there's like three states. Currently, they work with three states. It's basically they get a contract from the state and the District of Columbia. And I've heard from at least one listener that, like, there's a company that does this, you know, as a kind of employee benefit. So the, you know, employer will hire this company to make this kind of analysis available to their employees for their configuration of healthcare plans. Because, of course, it's a custom job for any mix of healthcare plans that's being offered. So it's not like a mortgage calculator where all any of us could go to this one website and plug in the numbers, because wherever you're getting your insurance from, whether it's the Oklahoma Exchange or the Indiana Exchange or this employer's plans or that employer's plans, they all got all these different, what's the ER deductible? What's this, what's that? And so whoever's making that tool has to code all of that into the tool for every situation.
So, Dan, it's very premature to ask you this because you're in the middle of, you know, your first season. And I hope it sounds to me, at least just judging by the fact that you have people donating, and this is really a self-funded effort. I mean, you have no big backstop other than a fiduciary who handles the sort of the nonprofit aspect of your show, but you're not part of one of the big networks. You have some NPR experience. You work for WBEZ. It sounds like you reported for Marketplace. So you have a long career behind you as a reporter, but you're really out on your own doing this without much of a backstop. So that's important. And I noticed on, I guess, the latest episode, you know, you for $2 a month, I think you said, people get their name read in the credits, which was pretty astonishing, pretty nice, actually, kind of inspiring. So what I hope that means is that it's growing and the word's getting out there. And of course, you have collaborated with a big podcast, 99% Invisible, which is how I came across this on the Orphan Drug episode, which has a big following. That's the podcast from Roman Mars that many folks like. And I know you've reported with him or for him or produced there as well. So is there any sense that, I mean, just the sheer complexity of all this, it seems like maybe the simplest answer would be, gosh, if we could just do away with all this, do away with the copays, the deductibles, the out-of-pocket costs. Like, why don't, you know, we always consider ourselves the most advanced country on earth with all this great technology at our disposal. Why couldn't we go to a system, and I know it's political, but why couldn't we go to a simpler system where we just had one system, kind of a, you know, and I know that's controversial to say government, but a, you know, a Medicare for all type of a thing. I mean, is that where this, you think this reporting will inevitably lead you, or are you way too sophisticated for that?
I'm not too sophisticated for anything. I mean, I'm kind of not enough of an expert, honestly, to be an advocate for any one thing. And I also think, like, I might have my idea of what would be, you know, the best idea. Medicare for all sounds, I'm interested. Tell me, you know, I'm definitely going to tell me more position about that. That sounds like it could be good. But the point of the show is that right now, I don't think, because our politics are so crazily polarized and famously polarized, and healthcare politics can be so controversial, my little modest goal for this show is that, like, while we, you know, we can't kind of wait for anybody to enact the policy that's going to save us all, and it could be a long wait. And we might, like, just all have a bunch to learn from. There's just, this field is so complicated. Like, the way things have gotten to be as crazy as they are has just a bunch of crazy stories in it. And, you know, I kind of hope that by getting together and telling some stories and learning some things, we can be comforted in each other's company and maybe lower our blood pressure enough about it to think a little straighter about what we might be able to do, and swap some good advice that can be of some help to us right now. So I think there are folks out there with really interesting proposals, and there's folks, you know, there's not a shortage of people advocating for specific solutions. And I don't think that's where I can help personally. I hope that I can help the way I'm trying to help myself, which is just by understanding more of how do we get here? What can I do about it for myself right now? What can I learn that's worth sharing? And just how can we feel a little less alone about it? Because that's part of what is so crazy making. I don't know about you, but I mean, I just feel like, you know, you have these choices. It's like, what am I going to do? And, you know, this is looking at your bills, at your taxes, at all these things that we don't hang out in bars and talk about. We're not, you know, it's not football. It's not baseball. We don't have a forum. And so I'm hoping I think I'm never going to run out of material. And so far, it feels like there are folks who are interested in being in this conversation with me.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dan Weissman, who's host and executive producer of the new podcast, An Arm and a Leg, about the costs of healthcare. Dan has been a radio reporter for more than two decades. He's reported in print and then in public radio. He was on staff for WBEZ. He's been a staff also with Marketplace. But you've probably heard Dan on other shows, including Morning Edition, All Things Considered. He's been on 99% Invisible and also on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. And Dan, is it just a kind of a summation of your work and life experience that led you to kind of, in my profession, we say hang out your own shingle and just, you know, take the creative leap to go out and do this on your own?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I thought it was like, well, this is a crazy idea. And I guess it still kind of is. It's pretty early days. But yeah, it feels that way. Doing it feels very much that way. Everybody, I mean, scores and scores of people in my personal life and professional life have helped me in uncountable ways, given advice, listened to early prototypes, listened to late prototypes. It definitely feels like I'm using everything I got, and that feels really, that does feel really nice.
Well, there's one tease that keeps coming up as I listen to the podcast, and it's, I think this episode is coming soon. It hasn't really aired, but there's this thing about this Renaissance fair that you have a quote from, but how is it that these workers at a Renaissance fair, they had a creative solution for how to fix their own healthcare costs?
Oh, man. Thank you so much for teasing it. That episode is coming out this Tuesday, and it's the 27th, and it is my favorite story. Yeah, workers at Renaissance fairs, I mean, it's a workaround. It's not an all-in-one solution, but it's really pretty great. And they've organized a nonprofit to do two things. And it's kind of by doing it, they've made more formal something that's just part of their thing. And this is really people who work at these fairs, performers and people who even work in the shops, are really kind of a tribe. And like helping each other out has always been a piece of their ethos. And so a bunch of years ago, they were like, well, you know, we could do a better job. We could help each other more and make sure that this happened in a way that was where everything went where it was needed most if we got a little more organized about it. So they hold fundraisers. And they, among each other, mostly. And in the last few years, they've raised about $500,000 to pay down each other's medical bills. And they've built a little mini bureaucracy, micro bureaucracy, to administer all that. It's tiny. It's mostly volunteers, and what's not volunteers, like, you know, sub-minimum wage labor when you break it down by the hour. But the more amazing thing is that they have also made, like, more than $2 million of medical bills disappear because one member of their tiny staff is someone who earns most of her living as a real estate agent, but then, you know, devotes her the rest of her time to basically teaching people how to advocate for themselves, how to ask, like, do you have a charity care application I can fill out, or can I apply for financial aid? And by coaching people about how to talk to providers on the phone and how to be really patient and really nice and, you know, and really detail-oriented. And who, when all else fails, will jump on the phone and play hardball with the doctor's office when they're being really, really unreasonable. And that her efforts amount to like $2 million worth of medical bills evaporating.
That really is absolutely amazing. And the story you tell of people collaborating, you know, that work in this area or have this hobby, it reminds me of, you know, small, I guess, associations like family or community-based organizations where they lend each other money or small loans and pay back. I mean, it's very similar in that, you know, very grassroots type of arrangement. Really interesting. And I guess my understanding is that a briefer version of this story ran a while ago on NPR and produced with Planet Money. And I saw somewhere, I think maybe on your website, where and I'm a fan of Planet Money as well. I mean, I like their reporting and I like their style and how they try to take complex, you know, economic topics and break them down and make them simple for us non-economists. But is it safe to say, Dan, that that's kind of what you're aiming for here with healthcare costs?
Yeah, I mean, they're a big inspiration. That shows a big inspiration for what I'm trying to do. You know, I think that the kinds of things that Roman Mars and his folks do in kind of exploring the kind of nerdy, unbelievable side of the origins of things that make up our world that we don't even think about are another. And there's another show that has been, I mean, there's a lot of shows that have been really influential, but another one is a show called Death, Sex, and Money, hosted by Anna Sale, where she says, these are the things that we don't talk about and we need to. And that a lot of what happens on that show are stories from folks who are listening, and that she's pulling together a conversation. And that's something I very, you know, I want to steal as much of her playbook as I can too.
Well, it's just absolutely a great podcast. I really have enjoyed listening to it. I find it compelling. I mean, I can't, you put out three episodes, and so I just, you know, as I guess people now do with Netflix, I was doing it with podcasts, just looking to walk the dog a lot further. The dog was like, why are we going another 20 minutes, you know? But it's very enjoyable, and I mean, I'm sort of in the healthcare game a little bit, but I certainly like talking about it more than anything else. And this is what I love is your kind of layperson's perspective on this incredibly complex thing, and you bring to it such a kind of a refreshing viewpoint and humor, and of course everyone's stories that you're bringing really to life here. It's just wonderful.
Thank you so much. That is so nice of you. Will you be my agent, please?
Well, sure. We want to get this. I think we got to spread the word. And, you know, I've been learning more about sort of the podcast ecosystem. And I guess I understand it's a pretty vicious jungle out there that you're competing in, and especially doing it on your own without having kind of a big, production company behind you makes it all the more challenging. So spreading the word organically, however you can do that. You have a very nice website, too, which, of course, we'll share with our listeners. It has your bio on it and your staff and the other shows. And there's nice pictures, including pictures of puppies and fish and things like that. So, congratulations on the great work.
Thank you. Yeah, let's give the website for anybody who's just listening. It's armandalegshow.com. And there's links there. If you're on a mobile phone, you probably have to scroll all the way down to find them. If you're on a PC, you'll see them over on the left-hand side. But you can click there. It's probably the easiest way to get a direct link to click to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify. Other places. So it's armandalegshow.com.
Armandalegshow.com, and it's absolutely free to listen to. That's the amazing thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, Dan Weissman is the host and executive producer of An Arm and a Leg, the new podcast available at armandalegshow.com. And it is a show, a podcast about the cost of healthcare. And it is brand new, just came out in November, and will be running on into the late fall and early winter. And Dan Weissman, congratulations on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to more of your work.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.